I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Kevin Kamenetz was finishing up his second and final term as Baltimore County Executive, and he was a leading contender for the Democratic nomination for governor when he passed away suddenly last Thursday. The shocking news of his death dramatically changed the political calculus in Baltimore County and across the state. Today on Midday, we explore some of the many questions raised by Kevin Kamenetz's unexpected departure from the scene with Baltimore County Council Chair Julian Jones, Pamela Wood of the Baltimore Sun, and Brian Sears of the Daily Record. Plus, a new play at the Everyman Theater is based on a book by a Baltimore-based writer who made an unsettling discovery of letters from his father's family. Richard Hollander talks about the Book of Joseph when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. As we come on the air this afternoon, we have just received word that Mayor Catherine Pugh has accepted the resignation of Police Commissioner Daryl D'Souza. Last week, federal prosecutors gave what was called a statement of information, with which Mr. D'Souza agreed to, which verified the fact that he had not filed an income tax return in the years 2013, 14, and 15. He had been placed on administrative leave with pay last week. Mayor Pugh did that on Friday. Today, we've just learned that Mayor Pugh has accepted Daryl D'Souza's resignation. So there will be another new police chief, and we will keep tabs on this breaking story and keep tabs on the goings-on at the Baltimore Police Department as information comes to us. We're not going to concentrate on that today. We are going to concentrate on another very shocking and disrupting event, shocking and disrupting to the political landscape, perhaps the most shocking and disruptive thing that happened to the political landscape in recent history. That's, of course, the death of Kevin Kamenetz last week from a heart attack. The 60-year-old Baltimore County executive was one of the leading contenders in the crowded field of hopefuls in the Democratic primary next month, who are vying for the chance to run against incumbent Governor Larry Hogan in November, with just a month until early voting starts in the primary. Candidates are scrambling to assess the new and uncertain dynamics of the race. Will Valerie Ervin, Kamenetz's running mate in the primary, choose to run herself, and if so, with whom? Will she run at the top of a newly formed ticket, or will she maintain her position in the lieutenant governor slot? Which of the remaining candidates in the race for the nomination will attract the Kamenetz voters, and what happens to the sizable war chest that he had amassed as the contest enters its final month? Kamenetz's death also occasions many questions about the future of Baltimore County. Three Democrats and two Republicans are running in their respective primaries to face off for the county's top job in the fall. In the meantime, who will the county council appoint to serve out the remainder of Kevin Kamenetz's term? Today on Midday, we'll explore these and other questions with Pamela Wood, who covered Kevin Kamenetz and who keeps a close eye on Maryland politics for the Baltimore Sun, and Brian Sears, who covers government for the Daily Record. It's good to see you both.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
And first, we're going to begin with Julian Jones, Jr. He is the 4th District Democratic Councilman who is the current chair of the Baltimore County Council. That's a position that rotates every year. He joins us on the phone from Towson. Mr. Jones, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me, Tom. It's my pleasure to be here.
And first of all, our condolences to you. I know you were very close with Mr. Kamenetz. You certainly worked closely with him in his position as county executive. What's next for the Baltimore County Council? Can you tell us what the process will be as you consider whether to replace or whether to appoint somebody in an interim position or not? What's up?
Well, the county charter is clear in terms of the interim position. That automatically took place in a seamless way and with the chief administrative officer, Fred Holman, taking over in the absence of the county executive. What we have to do as a council is decide how we're going to move forward in terms of selecting a county executive to fill out the remainder of his term. As you know, I've been telling everyone that many people have been calling with suggestions and recommendations, and I have been holding very, very firm that during the mourning process that I would not entertain any conversations or meetings or anything that even gets close to it. When somebody would say something to me, they would get the first sentence out. The second sentence, I would cut them off and say we would wait until today because the Shiva ended yesterday at 7:30. So today we can have all of those conversations. So to be quite frank, this is the first day that I will be meeting with my colleagues on a scheduled meeting. Today we're having budget hearings. So I'm sure there will be meetings throughout the day in one form or another in terms of how we should move forward. But the charter says we must select someone, but it doesn't say when. So it's our duty to do it, but there's no deadline in terms of 1 week or 2 weeks. So we'll see how it plays out.
Would you consider, given the fact that the election isn't all that far away, Mr. Kamenetz's term expires in December. There'll be a primary election next month on the 26th of June, and then an election for the position in the beginning of November. Would you consider having Mr. Homan simply run the county until then? Do you think it is incumbent upon the council to make sure that you do appoint somebody?
Yes. Well, the it is a consideration. Everything is sort of on the table. The charter merely says that the person must be of the same political party as Kevin Kamenetz, which is a Democrat, and the person meets the same qualifications in terms of being able to be elected to that position, which is something like 21 years old and lived in the county a couple of years. So everything else is sort of open. I don't want to get ahead of my colleagues because, like I said, I didn't talk to them. But we, throughout the day, we'll be measuring the pulse of everybody and getting everybody's feelings and concerns, and then we'll move forward. It could be Fred Holman or it could be someone else.
What are your personal feelings, for example, about some of the precedents that there are for this kind of thing? In 2013, John Leopold left as the county executive in Anne Arundel County. He resigned amid scandal. The county council there sort of entertained, you know, I think it was 10 or 11 different applicants, people who made themselves known to be interested in the job, and they chose one of them, a woman named Laura Newman, who ironically has since moved to Baltimore County, is no longer living in Anne Arundel County. But is that precedent something that you would consider as a possible model for your process?
No. The people elected the council here to do a job. And people, believe me when I tell you, there's no shortage of recommendations in terms of people who want to do it. I have been holding real firm or not communicating about it. Like I said, people would get their first comment out or their first sentence. So today we will see where everyone is, and we'll start making some steps. Now, if it is the will of my colleagues that that's something they want to entertain, then I would certainly consider it. But I think, by and large, we've been elected to do a job. The county charter calls on us to do the job. It's not something that any of us would want to do in terms of the tragedy behind Kevin's untimely death, but it's something we must do. So I am going to hold firm that we do our job.
And what about, I'll just give you one more question. I know you've been generous with your time and you're in the middle of the thing that you got to get back to. But, for example, one of the current members of the council, Vicki Almond, is also a candidate for county executive in the Democratic primary. Is the fact that she is currently a candidate, would that disqualify her from being considered as the interim county executive between now and December?
I would not, well, again, referring back to the charter, I'm not going to say it disqualifies her. Clearly, she has a right to voice her opinion, and if that's something she wants to do, then she certainly has a right to make that known to the other members. It'll be a four-person vote to select the next county executive. It is something that I'm sure she's thinking about, but I just don't know how she feels because I haven't talked to her.
All right, Julian Jones Jr., he represents the 4th District on the Baltimore County Council and serves as its current chair. Mr. Jones, thank you for your time. I appreciate it,
sir. Thank you so much for having me, Tom. I appreciate you. And hello, Pam and Brian. As always, I think you have a fantastic panel here today, Tom.
Well, thank you. I happen to agree with you wholeheartedly on that. Thank you so much, sir. I appreciate
it. Sure. Thank you for what you do. Bye-bye.
So, Pamela Wood, your reaction to Mr. Jones' comments.
Well, we certainly don't have much more information now about what the council is going to do. It sounds like as they meet today, as he said, I'll take the pulse and see if are they going to do a public process. It didn't sound like Chairman Jones wanted to do that. So, you know, I guess it remains to be seen what path they're going to take, not even just who they're going to pick, but how they're going to make this decision. Just continued uncertainty, it seems.
Yeah, and Brian Sears, I would imagine also that Jill Kamenetz and the family and the people who were close to Mr. Kamenetz, Don Moeller, his chief of staff, other people like that, would be given, it would seem logical that they'd be given some input in this situation.
Maybe, but it's unclear. I mean, Mrs. Kamenetz is not terribly political. It's not the same as, you know, we've seen in cases where, you know, you have like a running U.S. senator who dies while running a campaign and they put his wife up. It's a very different kind of a situation. I'm sure that Don Moeller, I mean, Don's been around for a long time. I'm sure that, you know, Don understands how to work the halls of Towson and will probably have some discussions. It's still very unclear as to what kind of process the council is going to use. I think it's interesting, and I'm not sure what one should infer from Councilman Jones's comments, but he said it's going to be a 4-person vote, and that was a clear reference to the 4 Democrats on the council. And so I'm wondering if he's anticipating that this is going to be something that strictly the Democrats are going to weigh in on, and they're not going to look for any kind of a buy-in or consensus from their Republican colleagues. And that could present some interesting dynamics on the council for the next 6 months.
Or it could have just simply meant that you need a 4-person majority on the council.
Right.
I mean, yes, there are 4 Democrats who often vote together in the rare times when it's not 7-0, but there could be room for some sort of coalition among parties.
And the charter does specifically state that the candidate or the person who fills the interim position has to be of the same political party.
Yes.
So they're not going to pick a Republican.
Correct.
No, they cannot
Or
pick
even
a
an independent, for that matter. They're going to pick a Democrat who is a minimum of 25 years old and has lived in the county for 2 years.
I mean,
so
one
that's
thing
pretty
that's,
wide open.
One thing that sounds pretty clear, Tom, is that they're not going to do sort of an application process like we saw in Anne Arundel County. So the question remains, you know, where will these pool of candidates come from and how public will the names be? Because I think that's the thing here. You mentioned that, you know, the family and the friends of the county executive, but let's not leave out the importance of the people of Baltimore County who actually had a say, you know, in reelecting Kevin Kamenetz and now will probably want to know as a matter of continuity and just their own political interest, knowing the names of the people who are being considered and being able to have some kind of an input on that.
Let's hear from a caller who is one of those people who was involved in that election. I assume Mike in Towson, welcome to Midday with Brian Sears and Pamela Wood.
Thank you. I wanted to comment on the replacement process. In Baltimore County, we tend to have, very little transparency, and it sounds like the councilman alluded to that going forward, that, you know, they possibly are going to do this in private. And I think it needs to be a public process. And I also am not sure why the logical replacement wouldn't be Julian Jones, because the councilman who spoke today, because he is the chair. Now, we have a floating chair situation on the council where every year it's a different chair, but that rotates among the dominant, the Democrat Party. But theoretically, you would think the logical person would be the chair or some other appointee, but it seems fairly biased that if they put in Vicki Ahmed, that potentially may give her an unfair advantage in the election coming up, especially when it in regards to the Republican candidate, because she, you know, theoretically, if she won the primary, would be the county executive, the interim
right.
county
okay,
executive.
Well, thanks for that comment, Mike. I appreciate it. So, Pam Woods, I mean, it it is an interesting calculation for Vicky Allman, whether if she is in fact the one chosen. But also, like in Baltimore City, when Sheila Dixon was deposed from office, again because of a scandal, it's part of a court ruling, it automatically deferred to the president of the city council, who at that time was Stephanie Rawlings Blake, who went on to win an election and stay in office for some 7 years. But, you know, I wonder, in terms of a political calculation, would this be a good move if they do happen to choose Vicky Allman? And again, we're clear that Mr. Jones said today he's not talked to anybody about that, including Ms. Allman. As calculations go, do you think that's an upside or a downside or a neutral thing in terms of her wanting the job full time?
First thought is that if any current member of the council were selected, whether it be Chairman Jones or Councilwoman Allman, that would create yet another vacancy and then another process to appoint somebody to fill that. So you have these sort of dominoes falling that all have implications on the election. Now, I could probably guarantee you, if Councilwoman Allman were named, that the other Democrats and the Republicans in the race would probably cry foul about that because, as noted, it would give her a new, fresh perch, which I'm sure the other candidates would deem an unfair advantage. So that's something the council would have to consider. They may want to do it anyway. Certainly she does have experience, been on the council for 2 terms now. But this is the sort of thing they're going to have to navigate in making this decision. And if it's not a public process, as the caller Mike alluded to, and we don't know who they're considering, the public doesn't have a chance to weigh in, that could be problematic.
And Brian, I wonder if this is analogous at all to the 41st District in the Senate, where Jill Carter is running against Martin O'Malley's son-in-law, J.D. Merrill, put herself forward as the interim replacement for Nathaniel Oakes, another person leaving office amid scandal. And J.D. Merrill has done exactly what Pam Wood has suggested the other candidates in this race do. He's cried foul.
And I think it is analogous. And look, I mean, what you heard the callers talk about is something that I've heard come from the Brochin camp. Primarily, they would like to see someone other than Vicky because you do have that. It does give you a bully pulpit. The other thing that it does though, I think is it could politically create a problem for me. So I think it gives her a bully pulpit if Councilwoman Allman gets the position. But flip the coin for a second. You come in a very difficult situation. Most county executive elect get a transition period. She would have to come in and hit the ground essentially running. And there's always the possibility that any county executive, interim county executive who is also running for that office would then be judged upon their job for the next 6 months, good or bad. And mistakes could be potentially magnified. And so at that point, one has to begin to weigh whether or not the benefit outweighs the risk. But you can't underestimate the power of actually having the job while you're running for the job.
Brian Sears is the State House reporter for the Daily Record. Pamela Wood covers Baltimore County government and politics for the Baltimore Sun. We'll have more on Maryland politics in light of the death of Kevin Kamenetz after a quick break. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, to find us on Twitter @MiddayWYPR. We are also broadcasting on the WYPR Facebook page. We're streaming live there. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, a conversation about the human brain. It's the nerve center that dictates our emotions. It makes us curious. It allows us to move. Why do we cry, for example? Why are some of us able to remember things better than others? How does our brain predict our physical movements before they happen? And what can monkey brains teach us about advertising? David Linden is a professor of neuroscience at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. He's going to join me to talk about a collection of essays that he's assembled from 40 neuroscientists called Think Tank. Plus, J. Wynn Russick reviews Soul, the Stax musical at Baltimore Center Stage. That's all coming up tomorrow. If you're just joining us today, we're talking about the changing dynamics and political upheaval that has followed the sudden death of Baltimore County executive and Democratic gubernatorial candidate Kevin Kamenetz. Joining me in the studio, Baltimore Sun reporter Pamela Wood and Brian Sears of the Daily Record. If you'd like to weigh in your thoughts about whether or not, for example, Valerie Irvin, Kevin Kamenetz's lieutenant governor pick, should run for governor, your thoughts about the changing dynamic of the race, our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle at Midday WYPR, my personal Twitter handle, and you're cordially required to follow me on Twitter, at Tom Hall WYPR, and we are streaming live on the WYPR Facebook page. This quick update on the news that I shared with you at the very top of the program, we found out in this hour that Daryl D'Souza, the commissioner of the Baltimore Police Department, who's under investigation by federal prosecutors, has submitted his resignation, which Mayor Catherine Pugh here in Baltimore has accepted. She says in a press release that she has initiated a national search to identify the new commissioner. That is not the process that she followed when she hired Mr. D'Souza. In the meantime, Gary Tuggle will continue to serve as the interim commissioner. So the mayor promising a national search this time around to replace the commissioner of the police department, Daryl D'Souza, who has, after a 30-year career with the department, has decided to resign in light of his legal troubles. So Brian's here. The one more thing about the Baltimore County Council and the county executive, and then we're going to move on to the gubernatorial situation. It's an interesting it's important to make a distinction that there really aren't parallels between Baltimore City and Baltimore County.
Correct.
With the sort of city council chair, city council president assuming the office of the mayor if the mayor can't continue. But that's not the same kind of deal in Baltimore County, is it?
That's correct, because the council members are each elected from one of seven districts, and then they amongst themselves choose the leader of the council, which rotates every year. And it's generally the majority party picks. So, you know, you have four Democrats who will rotate that amongst themselves. And I believe you would remember this, but I think mm-hmm. Pam, Julian's in his first term, and
he's in his first term. Yeah. Yes. And this is his first shot then as being chairman.
And so, you know, that makes a difference. And so he's probably been there the least amount of time of most of the members of the council. And so there's no real parallel between that and what we saw happen with Stephanie Rawlings Blake after Mayor Sheila Dixon stepped down.
And of course, Pam, this would set in motion a whole domino thing, because if Julian Jones, for example, were chosen to be the interim county executive, then there'd be a vacancy in the fourth
district.
So
right. And then that would have to be filled, and then you just, you know. It would continue.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but Julian running unopposed in the fourth district? So you would have to go. Would you have to go and find a Democrat to run in that primary?
He does have a primary challenger.
Right.
We have this from Matthew, who sends an email. I'd like to say it's very important for transparency and democracy in our county, given that there is a race for county executive this year. Several of the candidates are on the county council, and that incumbents are more likely to win a primary. The only responsible action to choose an interim county executive is not to appoint someone running for the executive post this year. It's not true that several candidates are on the county council. There's only one, Vicki Alm.
Correct.
And we don't know, as Mr. Jones mentioned this afternoon, we don't know whether Ms. Alm is even considering this as something she would like to do one way or the other. But we will find out. So, Pam Wood, the fate of Valerie Irvin is the thing that's on everybody's mind. She has until Thursday to decide. What are the options here? What may happen on Thursday?
Sure. Under election law, as we now all suddenly learned and went to our law books, she has 5 days at this point in the process before the primary. When a candidate for governor dies, the running mate has 5 business days, so until Thursday, to decide. She can decide to run for governor herself and pick a new lieutenant governor candidate, or she can remain as lieutenant governor and pick a replacement at the top of the ticket, or I suppose she could just sort of suspend the campaign and that's that. And so she has until 5 o'clock on Thursday to decide what to do. She's not been talking publicly about it or giving interviews, much like Councilman Jones said, out of respect for the family while they were still mourning. So we haven't heard yet, but we'll see what she does.
We'll find out. So, Brian, what do you think her calculus is going to include?
Look, I think she's got you got to calculate sort of, you know, can you win? Can you get the public? The public really very rarely ever pays attention to the LG candidates. It's always the person at the top of the ticket. She's got a short period of time to be able to get some, you know, to get some notoriety. That will certainly come if she decides to stay in the race, given the circumstances under which she would move to the top of the ticket. You know, there's also the question of money. We don't know the status of the money that's been raised by the campaign and whether or not that resides in the council in Kevin Kamenetz's direct account, if that's in the Slate account. There's some legal ramifications for that because state law considers the lieutenant governor and the governor candidate separate, which is why you have situations that we had like last year where Anthony Brown could not raise money during the General Assembly session, but Ken Ullman, his running mate, could. If the money's in the Slate account, Valerie Ervin is legally entitled to access that money and use it. If it's in Kevin Kamenetz's account, there's a somewhat of a muddled legal question as to how much access, if any at all, she could have to it, which could, you know, put her significantly behind in terms of fundraising if she's not able to access that money.
And we know that that's where the Kevin Kamenetz's account is, where he'd been piling up a bunch of money over the years. In January, he had about $2 million there. Now, in after she was named running mate, the ticket opened up a Slate account, but they just put $1,000 in it. Now, where they have been putting their money in the last few months of fundraising, that we don't know. The next campaign finance reports come out next week. So if it is continuing to be in Kamenetz's own account, that's going to be a question for her. Yeah,
So just to be clear, there are three different accounts. One is in Kamenetz's name only.
Correct.
And as you mentioned, there's about $2 million in that account. There is a committee for Valerie Ervin, a separate singular account for Councilwoman Ervin. That has about $50,000 on hand as
Correct.
Of the middle of last month. And then there's another, as you say, team account, Slate account, with the both of them, Kamenetz and Ervin. And as you mentioned, it's about $1,000.
Yeah, they just formed that. They took $1,000 from Kamenetz's account and put it over and formed that. But we don't know where they've been putting their money from all of the many fundraisers they've been doing in recent weeks.
And there's one more consideration. My understanding is, and again, we have not seen the numbers because the reports are not available, but my understanding is that the Kamenetz campaign had cut some commercials and bought some ad time. Again, another murky legal question about, you know, who paid for those commercials and whether or not they could be recut and used for Valerie Ervin and with essentially the same ad buys. The question becomes, because state law says that you have to be using your campaign money to pay for something that has a nexus to the campaign. Given the fact that one of the candidates is no longer involved in the campaign, the question there is, I'm told, a legal question about how that would work. And, this is why we have lawyers.
Yeah. And of course, the possibility exists that Valerie Ervin will not be able to access this $2 million. For example, when Barbara Mikulski left office, she had a lot of money on hand for campaign contributions, and she dispersed that to other candidates, and she gave some to charity. You were allowed to, as I understand it, and talking to people involved in that campaign, you're allowed to do one of those two things.
I spoke to the Board of Elections yesterday, and in the law, in this case, the money can go to the county central committee, party central committee, the state party central committee, or a variety of nonprofit and educational options for that. I don't believe that Kamenetz's money could be given to other candidates directly. They'd have to go to the party.
Okay, so if it goes to the party, if it went to the county central committee, for example, could they in turn allocate it to Valerie Ervin? How does that work?
I don't know for sure.
My knee-jerk reaction is yes, but with certain limits, because we do have transfer limits in the state. So I'm not entirely certain that some of those limits wouldn't apply. And so it would. I mean, even if suddenly the Baltimore County Democratic Central Committee had $2 million on hand, I don't think that they would be able to give $2 million to a candidate.
Yeah. And again, neither of you play lawyers, even on TV or radio, so
I
don't mean to put you on the spot and ask you a legal
question. As this goes forward, there will be lawyers earning their paychecks.
We will certainly find out.
And one of those questions, which is certainly relevant, but I think probably in the short time that we've had to sort of start asking all of these, not one that probably immediately jumped to mind.
And Pam Wood, you had a story yesterday in the paper about a number of people encouraging Valerie Ervin to run for governor. Donna Edwards, former congresswoman who left office to run in the Democratic primary for Senate, lost that race to Chris Van Hollen and is now running for county executive in Prince George's County. Rashern Baker, the current person in that office, of course, another candidate for governor. And you also talked about the head of a union. And, of course, Valerie Ervin, long history of labor organizing and involvement with organized labor. So there are people waving the flag, that's for sure.
Yeah, there does seem to be this kind of, at least publicly, this sort of effort to encourage her to run. We don't know what's happening exactly behind the scenes, if there are people in her ear suggesting her to run. But certainly Donna Edwards and Valerie Ervin are longtime personal friends, not just political allies and knowing each other from the political world. But Donna Edwards put out a statement saying, look, she can carry on Kamenetz's vision. I also called up John Boardman from Unite Here Local 25, which is a union that represents several thousand hotel workers in the D.C. area. They had endorsed the Kamenetz-Ervin ticket, again, in large part because of Valerie Ervin's experience in labor. She'd worked for unions. She most recently worked for the Working Parties or Working Families Organization. And he says, if I haven't talked to her, but if I will encourage her to run if she calls me, and they would back her. So there are some people trying to give her that nudge. But, I mean, I imagine it's got to be a very difficult decision for her to make.
And, Pam, you covered Kevin Kamenetz for a long time, and one of the last events you covered with him was, in fact, at a hotel where he was showing his support for hotel workers and they for him. And you watched him as he made beds and vacuumed and cleaned up hotel rooms. That's kind of ironic, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Kevin and Valerie both went to the Gaylord Hotel, which is an enormous hotel, and they connected with their unionized workforce there, and they were put through the paces by housekeeping staff and did their work, changed beds, cleaned mirrors, cleaned showers. And I think it was sort of a humbling experience for both of them. But the union said, you know, we want to make sure they're not just talking the talk. We want them to see what it's really like to work these jobs and why it's, you know, their issues are important.
And Brian Sears, Mr. Kamenetz consistently was in the what people consider the top three in this race. There are nine people on the ballot.
Right.
Seven of them are considered pretty serious. And three of them appear to be in the lead or have the best chance against a very popular incumbent governor who already beats each of them individually in polls.
Correct.
Now, the polls are early.
Right.
But Governor Hogan is going to be an interesting opponent in this race in November. Ben Jealous is scheduled to start some television advertising, I think, today. This alters the race in ways that no one can probably predict, but What's your take on what this means for the other two people considered at the top of the heap and next to Kevin Kamenetz, Ben Jealous and County Executive Rashern Baker from Prince George's?
I think it makes a murky situation murkier. I mean, there's no guarantee that anybody knows where the 17 or 18% that have told pollsters that they support Kevin Kamenetz. There's no guarantee where they'll go. Right now, the leading candidate so far in that race is undecided.
Right.
Undecided wins the election. That 17-18% could become more undecided because a lot of these voters have gotten on very early with the Kamenetz campaign. And so, you know, you tend to, you know, when you pick a candidate, you become team Kamenetz. It may be more difficult to immediately have a knee-jerk reaction and find someone before the primary. I don't know that anybody can tell you for sure where they're going to go. I've talked to a lot of pollsters about this, and they all sort of say the same thing. They're like, we just don't know, and we don't know that anybody's, you know, that the voters have had time to sort of really sort this out and figure out, okay, what's my plan B?
Yeah, and Pam Wood, all of the candidates, the top seven, appear to have made very careful strategic decisions about their lieutenant governor picks. Rashern Baker from Prince George's picks a person from Baltimore as his lieutenant governor. Elizabeth Embry. Kevin Kamenetz from Baltimore, the Baltimore area, picks a person from Montgomery County in Valerie Ervin. Does the fact that Jim Shea, for example, is a Baltimore-based candidate, that Ben Jealous is considered, you know, more of a Baltimore-based person as opposed to somebody in Montgomery or Prince George's, does that give him a leg up in terms of attracting a Kamenetz voter?
Well, you know, as Brian noted, there's so many people undecided in such a fractured race. So we don't really know, our voters who are selecting candidates doing it on that regional basis, as you suggested, somebody from the Baltimore area.
McGillis would also be in that.
Alec Ross.
McGillis is a reporter. Ross, Alec Ross is running for.
Right. So are people going regionally? Are they going ideologically? Are they going based on experience? If you want a conventional established candidate with history governing, that's, you know, that's your Kevin Kamenetz candidate, or that's your Rashern Baker candidate. So potentially the Kamenetz voters could align with Baker, or if Valerie Ervin stays in, they could go to her. There's just the voter behavior was so much undecided. It's just, it's so hard to predict or know. And I have people asking me all the time, who do you think's going to win? Or, you know my politics, who's best for me? And I can't answer because there's so many candidates. It's hard to suss that out.
When a thing like this that's so unexpected happens in the middle of a race that's already crowded, is there, Brian Sears, even a chance that one of the current gubernatorial candidates would punt his or her lieutenant governor candidate and replace that person with Valerie Ervin? In other words, have Valerie Ervin join a pre-existing team, which would, of course, mean somebody leaving a pre-existing team.
The short answer is I can't imagine that happening. The second answer is that I'm sure that there's probably some kind of a legal issue with that, because under any other circumstance, everything being equal, and Kevin Kamenetz is still alive and on the ticket, if for example, Kamenetz decided to withdraw from the race, the ballots are already set. The candidate list is already set. You wouldn't be able to go back and sort of pick someone up unless there was an opening somewhere. And so I don't think the mechanism of that, I think, is sort of too contorted to actually get there.
Yeah, and Pam, that was in your story yesterday too. The business about the ballots. We went through this whole kerfluffle with Nathaniel Oakes, who himself begged to be taken off the ballot and wasn't. The judge didn't allow that. Will Kevin Kamenetz's name appear on the ballot on June 26th or June 14th when early voting starts?
It seems like that's the case. We don't know that definitively, but given the ruling in the Oakes case, which, as a reminder to listeners, he resigned from office, pleaded guilty to federal charges, and then wanted to get off the ballot. He went so far as withdrawing his voter registration to make himself an ineligible candidate. And there was a court case to get him off, and the Board of Elections argued successfully, it's too late. We've printed the ballots. We have deadlines that are set in law. We can't change it. So Nat Oakes is going to be on the ballot, and it appears Kevin Kamenetz's name will be on the ballot, you know, even though he's gone.
Today is the 15th of May, and early voting starts the 14th of June. So, I mean, this is right upon us. But sort of, we just have a few seconds left here, Brian.
Sure.
Is there any one candidate that can make the case that he or she is helped by this tragic turn of events?
I don't think anybody can solidly make that case just yet. I think a lot of candidates are probably waiting to get through the mourning period to start making their solicitations to those voters. But I don't think anybody probably believes that they're an automatic to get those supporters. But they'll certainly be looking for all the edge they can get at this point.
And Pam Wood, real quickly, I mean, Kevin Kamenetz had amassed $2 million in his personal account. That wasn't the last money he was going to raise. I think it's probably a minimum of $2 million. It could be more. We'll find out in the next reporting. Does this open up a field of money for other candidates between now and the June primary, to say nothing of the general election?
I'm not sure. You know, just like the voters, where do they go? Do the people with hefty pocketbooks, where do they go? It's an open question at this point.
All right. Well, we appreciate your trying to answer these open questions. At least we got a chance to ask them now. As we mentioned, the Kamenetz family was sitting Shiva according to Jewish tradition, and that ended last night. The sun keeps coming up and the moon keeps coming up, and things will continue. So we will continue to cover this story with both of you and reading your reporting. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Pamela Wood covers Baltimore County government and politics for the Baltimore Sun. Brian Sears is the State House reporter for the Daily Record. We'll have links to their very fine reporting on our website, wypr.org/midday. Quick break. Then a playwright and a retired Baltimore journalist tell us about taking a suitcase of family letters from the page to the stage in a deeply personal saga, The Book of Joseph, at the Everyman Theater. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Stay with us.